and thank you for joining us for the Preceptor Podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Ryan, and we have with us today one of our colleagues, Dr. Dustin Lin. Dusty, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Dusty. I'm a critical care clinical pharmacy specialist at Parkview Regional Medical Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and also an associate professor of pharmacy practice at Manchester University College of Pharmacy.
And we asked Dusty to be with us today because there was a new trial that came out just recently, the RECOVERY trial, and it talks a little bit about the use of dexamethasone in COVID patients. And I really thought it would be a great thing for our audience to hear from a specialist in the area about what if this trial is important and if we should be making changes to what we do. So kind of to start out with, Dusty, could you provide us with like an overview of the study and what the findings were?
Sure. Well, you know, first, I think it's important to discuss the rationale for this study. And it appears that there are different phases of illness in patients with COVID-19. There's an initial phase in which the illness is triggered by the virus, and also maybe a second phase in which illness is triggered by the host response. So in the first phase of illness, symptoms are oftentimes nonspecific and may include fever, malaise, and cough, along with a number of other symptoms that I'm sure many of us have heard about or read about. In this phase of illness, an antiviral such as remdesivir may provide symptomatic relief and prevent disease progression. However, in the second phase of illness, we've seen localized inflammation in the lung and also systemic inflammation. We've seen increases in inflammatory cytokines such as IL-6 and also systemic inflammatory markers such as C-reactive protein. Now, these patients in the inflammatory phase of illness have hypoxia and bilateral infiltrates on chest imaging. In this phase of illness, immunomodulatory medications such as steroids might be beneficial to reduce systemic inflammation and modify the disease course. So the study that I'm going to be talking about today was the RECOVERY trial. It was a controlled open-label trial to compare different pharmacologic treatments in hospitalized patients with COVID-19. So the recent publication that we're going to be talking about from the RECOVERY network is in relation to low-dose corticosteroids. This was a multi-institutional study actually conducted at 176 hospitals in the United Kingdom. I read in the discussion of the article that they estimated around 15% of all hospitalized patients with COVID-19 in the United Kingdom were enrolled in this study, which just kind of got me thinking, like, what if we enrolled 15% of patients, hospitalized patients in the U.S. in a study of COVID-19? What might we be able to do, or what might we be able to find? These patients had clinically suspected or laboratory confirmed COVID-19 and were randomized to receive either standard of care or dexamethasone 6 milligrams once daily for up to 10 days. Now, the dexamethasone could be given either orally or intravenously, and the primary outcome that they were evaluating was all-cause mortality at 28 days after randomization. The authors were unable to calculate a sample size at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic as they were unsure really of what the outcomes were going to be in these patients. But they eventually determined that 2,000 patients in the dexamethasone group and 4,000 patients in the usual care group would provide power to detect a difference in 28-day all-cause mortality of 4%. And this was assuming a baseline mortality risk of 20% in this patient population. So they ended up randomizing just over 2,100 patients to receive dexamethasone and over 4,300 patients in the usual care group. Now, these patients had a fair number of comorbid conditions. About a quarter of patients had diabetes, heart disease, and chronic lung disease. And this is pretty similar to what we've seen in other analyses of COVID-19 patients in which the sicker hospitalized patients have a high prevalence of comorbid conditions. The mean age of patients was 66 years and about two-thirds were male. 16% of these patients were receiving invasive mechanical ventilation at baseline, 60% were receiving oxygen, and 24% were on neither oxygen or invasive mechanical ventilation.
Question, when they talk about invasive mechanical ventilation, would that include like CPAP, or would CPAP be included in that oxygen group?
Sure. So therapies like CPAP, BiPAP, high flow nasal cannula that we've been using in these patients would be in the receiving oxygen therapy group. The patients on invasive mechanical ventilation would be only those with an endotracheal tube mechanically ventilated.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that.
These patients were enrolled a median of 8 to 9 days after symptom onset, which is typically when we start to see more severe illness occur. So looking at drug utilization, the median duration of dexamethasone was 7 days, and 95% of patients randomized to the dexamethasone group received at least one dose. The authors found that in the entire patient population, mortality was lower in those randomized to dexamethasone. So death occurred in 22.9% of dexamethasone-treated patients and 25.7% of those randomized to usual care. So the odds ratio for mortality was 0.83 with a confidence interval of 0.75 to 0.93. This correlates to a number needed to treat of 36 patients. When looking at different subgroups of patients, the benefit of dexamethasone was confined to those receiving invasive mechanical ventilation or receiving supplemental oxygen. So in those requiring mechanical ventilation, mortality was 41.4% in the standard of care group and 29.3% in the dexamethasone group. Well, this mortality of just over 41% is pretty high in the standard of care group. It does seem to be similar to what other analyses have reported with COVID-19 patients on mechanical ventilation. So I think that this high mortality is not totally unexpected here. So the number needed to treat for those receiving invasive mechanical ventilation was 9 patients, and for patients receiving supplemental oxygen, the number needed to treat was 35. In contrast, there is actually no effect of dexamethasone in those not requiring any respiratory support. So in these patients, mortality was actually numerically higher, but not statistically higher in those receiving dexamethasone. Dexamethasone reduced mortality in those with symptoms for more than 7 days, but not in those with symptoms for less. And then in those patients that on invasive mechanical ventilation, not on mechanical ventilation at baseline, the risk of progression to invasive mechanical ventilation was lower in the dexamethasone group than in the usual care group. So, based on the results of this trial, the NIH has actually recommended the use of dexamethasone in patients who are mechanically ventilated and in patients who require supplemental oxygen, but not on mechanical ventilation.
That's great information. And I can come up with a lot of things to take away from this study personally, I'd say, but you're the expert. So what kind of factors would limit the interpretation of these study findings?
Sure. I think there are several factors that need to be considered here. First, this was an open label study, so it wasn't blinded. That could raise some concern that perhaps providers were aware of treatment assignment and maybe more likely to prescribe anti-inflammatory therapies to those randomized to usual care. However, the authors did provide some data on other therapies administered in a very small proportion of patients. So less than 3% received hydroxychloroquine or received IL-6 inhibitors such as tocilizumab or sirolimumab. And then finally, azithromycin was given to about a quarter of patients in each group. So it didn't appear that there are any differences in anti-inflammatory therapies between the two study groups. The authors also reported that just over 11,000 patients underwent randomization. However, only 9,300 were eligible to receive dexamethasone. The authors mentioned that the remaining patients had a known indication or contraindication to dexamethasone. However, it's not entirely clear what these reasons for not being a candidate for dexamethasone were. So that that was about 17% of those randomized who were ineligible, which may somewhat limit the external validity. The time from hospitalization to randomization was a median of 2 days. I think it's likely based on the results of this study that steroids will actually be initiated earlier in the hospital course. As we have been starting corticosteroids on admission in these sicker and sicker patients at my institution. So it's not clear entirely if early steroid administration would lead to better outcomes. I think another limitation, it might have been nice to see a little bit more about these patients, particularly their laboratory values that are associated with an inflammatory response, such as reactive protein, ferritin, or D-dimer levels, to evaluate other therapies that were needed by these patients, such as vasopressor use or the need for renal replacement therapy. However, I think that, given the speed at which, this trial was conducted, I think that, probably limited the amount of data that was able to be obtained to get these results and findings out in a timely manner. I think it's important to point out, too, that dexamethasone was beneficial in patients treated for more than 7 days after symptom onset, but not sooner. So as I mentioned, this, theoretical model of disease progression that's supported by laboratory findings suggest that patients requiring supplemental oxygen are likely in a hyperinflammatory stage of disease where corticosteroids may blunt the immune response and improve outcomes. Patients not on sublimin oxygen may be more likely to be in the viral phase of illness, where corticosteroids are unlikely to have a beneficial effect. And I think it really should be, stressed, particularly as, we see a lot of things in the media regarding COVID-19 therapies, that dexamethasone isn't for those in the outpatient setting and may actually be harmful if used earlier in the disease onset. So we know in other viral pneumonias such as SARS or influenza, that corticosteroids may increase viral shedding and perhaps may worsen outcomes in these illnesses. So very important to stress that a diagnosis of COVID-19 is not an indication for steroid therapy, but it should be confined to these sicker patients.
And Dusty, I think I read in the study, because I did look at it a little bit, it didn't matter in the study if it was oral or IV. I think you alluded to that earlier. Do you, as you're starting to see this treatment that's being kind of starting to be rolled out, are you seeing more of one or the other at your site?
Sure. We're seeing a lot more intravenous dexamethasone earlier in the course of illness. These patients could receive oral or intravenous dexamethasone. We've started again, with intravenous, but as if patients improve in their clinical course and seem to be on the moving towards transfer out of the ICU or hospital discharge, we may complete a course of therapy with oral dexamethasone. We don't, however, send patients out of the hospital on dexamethasone. So if patients are only in the hospital for 5 days and they receive dexamethasone for 5 days, that's all the dexamethasone therapy they will receive. And that's similar to what was done in this study. And it was, for a maximum of 10 days or until hospital discharge.
And does it matter? I know that this study was specifically dexamethasone, but does it have to be that steroid, or would other steroids work as well?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. My suspicion is the outcomes would likely be similar with an equivalent dose of another steroid, such as methylprednisolone. However, dexamethasone definitely offers some advantages compared to other corticosteroids. So, I think, first, dexamethasone doesn't appear to have, a significant mineralocorticoid effect. So mineralocorticoids promote sodium and water retention, and this can lead to volume overload. In the setting of acute respiratory distress syndrome, the general goal is to keep patients' fluid intake at a net even or negative balance. A steroid with mineralocorticoid effect could make this more difficult. So I think, dexamethasone is potentially advantageous in that, it's primarily has glucocorticoid anti-inflammatory effects. It also has a long biologic half-life of up to about 36 hours, which allows for once daily administration. And the drug, after discontinuation, because of its long half-life, may have a little bit of self-tapering effect, which could potentially prevent any rebound inflammation from occurring. I think, the other supporter of dexamethasone was the recently published DEXA-ARDS trial, which found reduced duration of mechanical ventilation and mortality when dexamethasone was given to patients with ARDS. And I think this also helps to support, the plausibility for its use in COVID-19.
And I just have one more clarifying question. This is the hospital pharmacist part of me that's asking this. Are we seeing that this is being solely used in ICU settings? I know you said you're not doing outpatient, but you are also using it on regular floors, correct?
That is correct. What we've done is, followed the patient populations in this study that derive benefit. So, those that are on invasive mechanical ventilation or those requiring supplemental oxygen will receive corticosteroid therapy.
Dusty, thank you for all this information that you've shared. Can you just kind of summarize what you really are taking away from this in terms of practice from this trial?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think this is a large trial of, that showed benefit in sicker patients with COVID-19, particularly those on mechanical ventilation or requiring supplemental oxygen. These patients have lower mortality with the administration of dexamethasone. Adverse effects were not reported in a study. However, steroids at this dose and duration are generally considered safe, and it would be reasonable to use dexamethasone in this patient population moving forward.
Dusty, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insight on this study. We appreciate that.
Well, thank you for having me.
And thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. If you like this podcast, please like or subscribe. We would love to hear from you about topics that you are interested in or ways we can make this podcast better. Thank you, everyone.